Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann today. In 2016, the Netflix original show Master of None won an Emmy for Outstanding Writing in a Comedy Series. Its co-creator, Alan Yang, who is Taiwanese, saw his acceptance speech as an opportunity to address Hollywood's lack of diversity.
Thank you to all the straight white guys who dominated movies and TV so hard for so long that stories about anyone else seem kind of fresh and original now.
Alan Yang was making a joke, but one founded in truth. A study from the University of Southern California revealed that Asians made up less than 6% of speaking roles in 2016. We're talking about the lack of Asian representation in American film and television. Joining us from New York is culture writer for The New York Times, Sopan Deb. Sopan, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also joining us by phone is stand-up comedian, actress, and filmmaker Asko Okatska. Asko, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you both for being here. And I want to know, and I'll start with you, Asko, what did you think of Alan Yang's acceptance speech?
I mean, I think it's great that he used the opportunity as a megaphone, you know. I think that's a great time to use it, you know.
It got a message across.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And you're winning at the same time, so it's a double plus, you know.
Deb, why are we waiting until now to tell such diverse stories?
Well, it should be noted that it's gotten a little better over the years. Over the last couple decades, Aziz Ansari, for example, is the lead of a show, Master of None, as you mentioned. Mindy Kaling is the lead of a show. But it's been incremental, right? The Big Six, starring Kumail Nanjiani, was also a decent-sized step forward because we haven't seen in some time a movie in which a South Asian character is the lead of a romantic comedy, and for that movie to also have the double effect of doing well in the box office. So the progress has been incremental, but has it been enough? Probably not. You still have issues in which, an Asian American or an Asian role has gone to a white person, and a prominent example of that is Matt Damon in The Martian. But there has been some progress made. The other part, of course, is it's a cultural issue as well, in that, you know, I grew up, I'm an Asian American, and a lot of my friends, we're not encouraged to go into the arts, in that, there's always that stereotype about wanting, your parents wanting you to be an Indian, wanting you to be a doctor or an engineer. And so part of it's also, parents not encouraging us to go into the arts, but at the same time, when we do, the opportunities are a lot less. As an Indian, I'll say, a lot of actors, the only opportunities for Indian actors is to play stereotypical cliches like cab drivers or terrorists, or for Asian Americans, heavily accented, caricatures of. The part of it's a lack of opportunity, and part of it's also just a lack of push from a previous generation.
Mm-hmm. Asko, you're a comedian, actress, filmmaker. Talk a little bit about your journey and your experiences in the entertainment industry.
I think that, so I'm in L.A. I live in L.A. And I think that, it depends on which media you're talking about. But with TV, it really is like getting a lot better, not only with opportunity, but with being represented. Film is still slow. For some reason, I mean, film really needs to catch up with a lot of things besides story, because they're still, for some reason, coming out with like Ant-Man versus Superman versus Batman, or, stories that we've seen over and over. For me, as a stand-up comedian and actor, a lot of people would say that there might be a lot going against me just because I'm a woman and a woman of color. But I just feel like right now the voices are stronger more than ever, and opportunities. I don't find myself going out really for roles where it's like I have to do heavily accented or heavily stereotyped parts.
So you see things improving for people, actors, actresses like you.
Yeah, I really do. I think, you know, I mean, TV especially, like, really, like, crunches the numbers, I think, when it comes to who's watching at home, you know. Twitter, like, Facebook conversations on social media is really being, I think, being heard. I mean, you know, I always joke that when we're not represented, at least with Asian Americans, you know, I always joke that white people, you know, they ask to speak to the manager when they're at the restaurant, when they're mad, you know, other people march on the streets and Asian Americans take it to Twitter. So, and that sort of like spreads pretty quick when you're voicing a concern, you know.
Mm-hmm. You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher, and we're talking about the depictions of Asians in Hollywood this hour. Sopan, with Hollywood having such a tough time casting roles, specifically films, because apparently TV's doing a little better, is it really tough, or rather an excuse, not to cast Asians?
Well, that's a good question. I think that Hollywood, before anything, is an economic engine. So their first priority is to make money. And now that we have a couple shows and films that have shown that they can make money with a South Asian lead or an Asian American lead, I do wonder in the next years whether that opens the floodgates. So it's a good question whether that's an excuse or what. But I will say, as we've made this point, you know, the last couple of minutes here, it has gotten better, and it seems like there are more opportunities opening up. But I will also note that this opportunity has mostly opened up for men. You know, Asian American women and, you know, South Asian women and Arab women their stories are very much in the minority in terms of the opportunities in terms of the stories that are told. You know, Mindy Kaling is a notable exception to that, of course. But for the most part, you know, the stories that are getting told, and I say for the most part, this is of course not entirely truth, but for the most part, the stories that are getting told are those of Asian men and South Asian men. And that's one place where I think that where Hollywood, both TV and film, are very much behind.
Atsuko, well, you're one of those women. Do you feel that you're falling behind Asian men in opportunity?
I mean, when it comes to possibly perspective, when we were just talking about representation, I think, you know, when there's an Asian male perspective, per se, there's going to be an Asian female character in it. And so, I mean, I'm, you know, we're not quite there with, I guess, the dream of representation and opportunity. But, you know, for Fresh Off the Boat, for example, to be the first Asian American family on TV in 20 years, and that's crazy. There was a silence of 20 years, you know, and the first one before that was All American Girl. I think, I mean, that's, some would say it's a win, you know, and it's crazy to call that a win, because why did it take so long for another Asian American family to pop up, and then Master of None came around, you know, right after that, and so, I mean, it's just the beginning.
Well, have there been times that you've been asked to portray an Asian stereotype, and did you?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I had to audition as a geisha, but it was a pizza commercial. So I don't know if that counts.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, right? Is that, I don't know if it's stereotype, because it's a geisha. They had like a new Asian flavor pizza at Caesars or something like that, Little Caesars. So it was kind of trippy, because I don't know if I should be offended or if I should be happy that they were representing Asian flavors in pizza now.
I guess that's your point, yeah.
Can I ask a question? This is a debate I often hear about among, you know, Asian friends of mine who are in the entertainment business. I wonder if you feel like accepting roles that can be seen as caricaturing Asian Americans hurt the cause, in that they help because actors and actresses are willing to accept those roles. Those are the only roles that are made available for Asian Americans. I wonder how you'd feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you should. It depends on what you're trying to do with the conversation. But for me, as someone who's trying to progress the conversation and open up the floodgates of like representation in a accurate way, I definitely sort of agree that, you know, if you help something happen, whether it's maybe Matt Damon getting a role in Saving All of China, you know, in The Great Wall. If you help happen, you know, even if you're not in it, you know what I mean? Like, even if you, besides being a financier, I think that you're sort of supporting that trend to continue.
But on the other hand, as you mentioned there, you're an actress and you need work, and sometimes if it's there, you'll take it. I'm sure that's a thought for, you know, maybe not you, but others too.
For sure. You mean white people?
Yeah, I mean, Asian, anybody taking what we would call a caricature or a stereotype role just to put food on the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when it comes to stereotype roles, I'm really trying to rack my brain here for an example of something that's been written in 2017 for.
But the fact that you can't think of something right now is probably a good thing. So, Pan, you wrote an article about the new film, The Big Sick. What is that storyline?
So The Big Sick is about it's a real life. It's Kumail Nanjiani's story, who is a stand-up comedian, and Kumail, along with his wife Emily Gordon, wrote an autobiographical story about how they met. And Kumail Nanjiani grew up in Pakistan before moving here to the U.S. And he met Emily, and they start dating. Kumail has to keep the relationship a secret because his parents want him to get an arranged marriage. So he breaks up with Emily, who is the true love of his life. And afterwards, she falls into a coma. She gets sick. This happened in real life, not because of the breakup, but she was sick. And during that time, Kumail, you know, helped nurse her back to health and realized that he truly loved her and kind of defied his parents. And after she came out of the coma, ended up marrying Emily. And so one of the pieces of there was some backlash to the film because a good portion of South Asian women felt that Kumail, as part of making the film, caricatured South Asian women. There's a run of scenes where Kumail's mother is trying to arrange him to get married to a South Asian woman, and he's not interested. And there was backlash because, you know, women felt that, once again, this is the latest example of a movie that makes white women more desirable than South Asian women, and the South Asian women exist merely to please Kumail, and they are just to desire him. So my piece was about my personal experience growing up as a South Asian, as a Bengali boy growing up in India. I mean, growing up in Jersey. Excuse me, I did not grow up in India. I grew up growing up in Jersey, and the piece was about. It was in essence a defense of Kumail, because I watched The Big Sick and I had a very visceral reaction to it. I felt like I was watching a reflection of my own story, which frankly is rare in Hollywood. You know, Kumail's story and my story, and you know, other people, you know, that grew up here as, you know, South Asian or Asian American, those stories don't get told very often. It's not like they never get told. They just don't get told very often. And so it was great for me to see The Big Sick. One of the key reasons I disagree with the criticism of Kumail in this particular case is that it's his personal story. It's not every South Asian story that's ever existed, but it's his story. It's a small slice of life. And I think to fault him for that is amounts to the kind of erasure that we are faulting Kumail for. And it also amounts to an erasure of Emily Gordon's story because she co-wrote the movie. So this is her story as much as it is Kumail. So that was pretty much, in essence, the movie and my response to the criticism surrounding it.
Yeah, we are going to have to break here. And before we say goodbye to you, Atsuko, I just want to wish you luck as a comedian, actress, and filmmaker going forward. Thank you so much for joining us, and we appreciate your comments this morning.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And we'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, filling in for Ann today. Scarlett Johansson played the lead role in The Ghost in the Shell, a movie based on a Japanese cartoon. Matt Damon saved China in the 2016 film The Great Wall. The Japanese comic series entitled Death Note has been rewritten to take place in Seattle, not Japan, where the story is originally set. And now the casting controversy for the live-action remake of Aladdin has caused people to question whether or not Hollywood has really made progress in representing minorities, specifically Asians, on screen. We're talking about Asians in American media and the whitewashing of Asian characters and storylines in film and television. Still with us is Sopan Deb, culture writer for The New York Times. And joining us by phone is Ki-young Swearingen, assistant professor at Ohio State University and former director of technical lighting at Pixar. Welcome again to you, Sopan, and welcome, Ki-young.
Thanks for having me.
Sopan, I want to start with you because I want to first clarify this term whitewashing and when we started, what you think it means and when we started using this in reference to movies and television.
Oh, whitewashing at a very basic level, it means, from my understanding, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, it's when a role that is traditionally, that should be for an Asian American, is given to a white person. So example would be Matt Damon in that Great Wall movie recently, or Matt Damon in The Martian. The character Matt Damon plays in The Martian, I believe in the book, is supposed to be Asian. In terms of when this started, that's a good question. I don't have the answer to that. I believe the term has been around for decades. Mm-hmm. I don't know where the genesis is, but if someone else is a little bit more of a historian than me, I'm sure they'd have a better answer for you than that.
So basically, these roles are being cast by predominantly white actors, actresses that are supposed to be going to Asians, as the scripts originally call for. Why is this happening?
Well, it's pretty, at least at this point, it's pretty well known that Asian Americans and South Asians and minorities in general have a hard time getting roles that aren't caricatures in Hollywood. And as we talked about this hour, generally the roles, this has improved in recent years. There have been more roles for people of color and women of color and men of color, but generally, those roles are still far and few in between. And as a result, it's an economic thing too. Would you rather have Matt Damon, who is an A-list star who can bring in money for a movie, or would you rather have an unknown actor? And it's a self-fulfilling cycle in some ways, right?
Because they're playing it safe, apparently.
Right, and so the same people keep getting those roles. So it's hard for someone to break in. Now, in the last couple of years, as we've mentioned, there have been some break-ins. Kumail Nanjiani, Aziz Ansari, Mindy Kaling. You had Fresh Off the Boat on ABC, and so there has been some movement. Whether that's enough, obviously it's not. But there seems to be at least a move in the opposite direction.
So there seems to be a move because Asian Americans saw the most movies last year out of any demographic. So why do you think then we're not seeing as much of those stories getting told? Do you think it will now start continuing, that the snowball effect has started?
Yeah. I mean, remember, this is like turning a juggernaut around. You know, when it's not easy to turn an oil tanker, but you can do it. So it's been institutionalized in many ways, you know, to keep giving the same A-listers the big roles and whatnot. But do I think it's going to get better? Well, it already has. I don't think there is any question that it's easier for prominent Asian Americans or prominent South Asian actors or Arab actors or Middle Eastern actors to get roles beyond caricatures. I think it's clearly demonstrated that's easier now than it was in the 70s. That doesn't make it easy. That doesn't make it, you know, but it is more common now.
Kyung, you worked for Pixar on the other side,
yeah,
with the production,
mm-hmm,
part of movies. Did you notice a, mm-hmm, lack of Asian representation, South Asian, Eastern Asian, in the production part of TV and film?
It's difficult to say that it was lack of a representation, but I would say it's growing. It's absolutely, there was a less number. And the thing is that Pixar Animation Studio is a little unique. I can't really say that they are the part of the main major the flow, because they are very, very focused on diversity. So there were a lot of Asians, and there were a lot of Asian Americans. So a little bit different, I would say, but still, I would say it's not a majority. Of course, it's a huge minority, and it's not only Asian. There's, you know, minority in women, minority in all other sides. But I know that they've been working toward big in diversity. So, there was a way more flow. The thing is, it's kind of interesting that it's not only from the company's point of view, it's actually from our artist's point of view. We prefer this different colors that Asians or Europeans or other people outside of America brings to the table. We like this rich in color, rich in story, rich in this diverse kind of a direction. So we really encourage and we really like that. But sometimes it's kind of hard to find those talented students out in the education. So that's why I think it's important as an educator to represent Asian and represent those kind of virtues and values into in academia, so that we can actually make those students more represented, so that they can actually make their dream come true and they can go to the field and filmmaking field.
You know, Sopan, this sounds like what you reiterated, what she said earlier, that as a young person, you weren't encouraged to go into the arts. And so I'm wondering, Kyung, were you not encouraged either to go into the arts?
The thing is, when I was young, because of Korean culture, I'm originally from Korea, and Korean culture is, it's a very competitive culture, because it's small country and there was a lot of people in there, so many people were encouraged to do, let's say, medicines or science or engineering, and you know, much more kind of working toward the job making. And so when I expressed my interest in, you know, films or art or drawing or painting, my parents and relatives were not very excited about it. I think there was not much of at the time, I think people are not really thinking that is going to be actually that kind of education or that kind of studying is going to line toward jobs or, mm-hmm. So it's it was a little hard to get out of that shell. I think things are rapidly changing. Things had rapidly changed. So I think I see, you know, in my class and also in my previous classes, and I have seen a lot of the changes and, you know, basic understanding from my students. And I think that also affect, you know, the field and many of the Asian Americans or Asian people come in, and they have kind of a similar the past with me, and they're slightly changing now at this generation. But yeah, I worked with some animators at Pixar. They formerly they were in med school. They were in actually in the field working as an engineer.
But they finally found their real calling.
Yeah, exactly.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher, and we're talking about the depictions of Asians in Hollywood this hour. If you have a question or comment, give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email allsides@wosu.org. In June, Sopan actors Daniel Day Kim and Grace Park exited Hawaii 5-0, and the actors had been seeking equal pay with their white co-stars but failed to reach deals with CBS television studios. I find that so hard to believe, and especially since that had been a show that had been successful for many years.
Yes, that was a very interesting thing, and this just goes to kind of the latest front in the battle for Asian American actors that are fighting for visibility. I wonder about that specific instance. Let me pull back a little bit and go to a 30,000 foot view here. The part of the problem here is not just in front of the screen, it's also behind the camera, right? In that there aren't a lot of Asian Americans and South Asians, you know, that are writers, that are executives, that are directors, that are producers. And so that also makes us a little bit more of a challenge for the Constance Wu's of the world and so forth and so on, you know, Daniel Day Kim and B.D. Wong, et cetera, et cetera. So part of it's also a behind the scenes thing, in that there just isn't enough representation for their interests aside from being on camera, if that makes sense.
Right. I think it's kind of what both you and Kyung have been talking about, trying to get people more interested in the field, not just on camera, but in all aspects of the field. Is that some ways then for Hollywood to change the order of this, to combat this?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. If you put more people behind the scenes, absolutely. And the other thing that does is the stories that is, forget the casting for a second, forget, you know, opportunities. It also tells stories of the Asian American experience, of the South Asian experience, of the Middle Eastern experience that go beyond the kind of the simplistic versions that we see now. You know, oftentimes you see, you know, white people writing stories that they know very little about. And so definitely I think putting more, you know, and this isn't just for Asian Americans, it also means Latinos, you know, African Americans and whatnot. Putting more representation behind the scenes would certainly go a long way in that.
Mm-hmm. As a culture writer, is it hard to see these Asian stories replaced by white leads? To sit there and watch and know?
Yeah. Is it hard? I wouldn't say it's hard. I it's more that it's expected. And so when I saw The Big Sick, for example, I was astonished. I was pleasantly surprised, and I was hopeful for the for the future of this. But when I see stuff like The Martian and other movies like that, it's like that's what I expect. And perhaps it says something about me that my expectations are so low.
Maybe. Young, are you starting to encourage young people, since you are in and have in, you know, the education field and have the opportunity to see young people, to encourage more minorities to go into the creative arts, whatever they may be?
Absolutely. And so another thing that I want to note is that, you know, culturally, it's a little different to be, I would say not different, difficult to be outward and promote themselves and speak up. It's the culturally, we actually, in a way, suppress the expression. So sometimes it's difficult to be noted and represented when they are surrounded by much more outspoken, outspeaking those people. So not only for the students, but also in the field, that many of Asian Americans or Asians that I worked with, they don't really complain. They don't really say anything outside that, you know, okay, I want to be promoted, I want to do this, I want, you know. So yeah, it's not only that I encourage my students to, you know, be more interested in war, but also another thing is that how can they represent themselves in the field or in the industry or, you know, in the company, and they can go out more proactively because they're they have to compete. They have to actually speak their language, other people's language. They have to basically fight for, you know, equal footing. But if they are only, you know, they have to basically get out of their shell. They have to understand the, you know, another way. So that's another thing that I basically, you know, sometimes I see those international students and I try to get a little more one-on-one and give those understanding.
That's an interesting perspective on how culturally this can affect, you know, what we're all trying to accomplish, and is to have more representation in the TV and film. Kyo-Young Swearegen, thank you so much for joining us. Kyo-Young is an assistant professor at Ohio State University and former director of technical lighting at Pixar. And our conversation will continue. You're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm your host, Gail Hogan, filling in for Ann. Annie Wong is author of the book Fresh Off the Boat, which was later adapted into a TV show featuring an Asian-American family. Wong's frustration with the loss of Asian identity in America is exemplified by not just the lack of portrayal of Asian characters in Hollywood, but the inaccurate portrayal of Asians in film and TV. Here he is in an interview with Time magazine.
It's very strange in America that if you're interested in certain things, you're immediately branded black or white. But what is it to be Asian? What do you expect me to do if I'm Asian, then I'm just good at math and good with chopsticks and eat Chinese food? I mean, when brothers in Harlem like Kung Fu, it's never like, oh, you think you're Chinese. It's like, no, you like Kung Fu.
We're talking about Asian stereotypes in media and the impact those inaccurate representations have on viewers. Still with us is culture writer for The New York Times, Sopan Deb. And joining us by phone is Dr. Srivi Ramasubramanian, media psychologist and associate professor at Texas A&M University. Welcome to you, Shriva.
Hi.
Well, nice to have you here. Thank you. A question for you. Do you think Annie Wong is justified in saying that there is a loss of Asian identity in America?
I think that's an interesting perspective, because a lot of the research on race and media has focused purely on black and white issues, and it's only more recently we see much more emphasis on Asian portrayals or Latino-Latina portrayals in the media. And when you think about the invisibility of Asian identities that we've been talking about so far in the media, this is reinforced by also, this cultural, you know, bringing together of many, many different groups where the specific identities are not appreciated. So if you could be Middle Eastern, but you know, you're asked questions about, you know, Chinese or Korean identities, where the subtleties and nuances are lost. You know, I'm often asked, for instance, if I know belly dancing, but I mean, I don't know anything about that. So this whole thing about not just the lack of representations, but also the stereotyping, the nerds or the geeks or perpetual foreigners. The examples that were brought up by in this speech show that, you know, it's also the quality of representations that matter, and also this the need to have much more nuanced representations.
What is then the larger, the bigger effect of the Asian stereotypes on viewers if this is all they see on Asians and non-Asians? And so, Pan, I'll direct this to you.
I'm sorry. Do you mind repeating that question?
Sure. What is the larger effect, the bigger effect of the Asian stereotypes on viewers, Asian and non-Asian?
Oh, sure. Well, this is what we talked a little bit about before, which is that the stories that are being told are not that they are truly indicative of the Asian American experience. And if that's how we're being portrayed, then imagine how that trickles down into the rest of society and the kind of jobs that are available for us and the kind of image that, you know, people have of us. And if that's the – pop culture – look, pop culture is a very effective way of bringing about change in some ways, whether it's about, you know – I think part of the reason, for example, I think that attitudes towards, you know, the LGBTQ community have gotten better over the years is because, you know, by and large, the portrayal on TV and film has, you know, especially in the last decade or so, been very friendly.
Mm-hmm.
So if you expand that to the opposite way, if you're only depicting caricatures of a culture, that's all people are going to see, because we are consuming pop culture more so than we are really consuming much else, if that makes sense.
And some people are isolated anyway, and that may be the only way that they see another culture. We're going to go to the phones. Fred from Grove City, you're on the air. Your question, please.
Well, I think the lead-in, fresh off your boat, played the North Korean dictator who was raised in Switzerland in the interview. And I'm wondering how authentic it is for a Chinese-American to play a Korean leader, and whether those, you know, what level of authenticity are we really looking for?
Interesting question. Do either of you
want to? That is interesting. That is interesting. In fact, this is actually an existential debate that that I've heard among other Asian American actors. So, for example, can a Korean play a Chinese person, or vice versa? I think the general look. By the way, just to clarify here, I in no way speak for all the Asians in the world. You know, so please don't take this.
You're just one man. You know, yes.
Yeah. Right. But here's what I will say. I think that generally the issue is with the lack of Asian Americans and South Asian and Middle Eastern and Arabs. Their lack of general opportunities on film and TV. So if you cast someone Chinese playing someone Korean, you know, you're still giving someone who is Chinese an opportunity that they haven't had for decades. So, and you're still an actor, you know, you're still playing, you know, you're still doing your job, you know, but is it, how authentic is it? It's a great question. But on the other hand, there are, you know, there are plenty of people that I've met that feel the opposite way, that, you know, that having someone Chinese play someone Korean is also, you know, not exactly progress. Why not get a Korean to play a Korean?
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
And to me, it's a very interesting discussion, and, you know, it should be interesting to see where that goes.
Shrivi, I have to ask about your thoughts on the stereotyping that young Asians may see on television. Does mm-hmm. that make them as kids mm-hmm. feel inferior? Does that set them up for bullying? Does it set them up for other issues because of the stereotyping? And as we said, that may be the only time that some folks have an impression or really get to see another type of culture.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of research on how viewers, white viewers, for instance, who see Asian characters on TV or films, what effect does it have on them? And also on how these portrayals have effect on Asian Americans themselves. So what we find is that when you see a lot of these, even seemingly positive portrayals, it usually comes along or dovetails with things like social awkwardness, for instance, right? So a model minority stereotypes of being hardworking or so on often goes along with, oh, they're not, they're socially inappropriate or not very good in social settings. And we find that these kinds of messages go along with each other. So what seems positive can actually have a underlying negative tone. And these things have a negative effect in terms of self-esteem and self-concept for Asian Americans as viewers. And they reinforce for white Americans sense of superiority or whiteness is still maintained in the stories that are being told, where Asian characters are sidekicks or are just minor characters. So yes, we do see that there are differences, and also the other way around. When you do see positive portrayals as Asians, we see that youth, for instance, when they see positive portrayals, their self-esteem is higher, and they have greater ethnic pride in themselves. So there is power in these messages and in popular culture. It's probably not been used to its potential.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher, and we're talking about the depictions of Asians in Hollywood this hour. If you have a question or comment, give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email allsides@wosu.org. And we're talking about these stereotypes. So, Pan, how did these stereotypes even begin? It seems like they go back a long time.
Well, they go back, and this is not unique to Hollywood.
Right.
This is not unique to this is all walks of life where, you know, society gave most of the, you know, most opportunities to white Americans. And that's just how it is. And that didn't, you know, whether that was in school or whether that was in, you know, in any industry. So I don't think that's necessarily so that's not a Hollywood, that's a societal thing. Now, has that progress been as fast in film and TV as it has in other industries? No, it has not. I think that much is clear. But part of it, of course, it's less a Hollywood thing and more just a generally institutionalized thing that started, you know, years and decades ago.
Phones now. Denny from Columbus, you're on the air, and your question, please.
Yes, this is maybe a little off topic, but I just wanted your opinions, maybe you know of her, and I wanted people to hear about her. There's a comedian, Ali Wong, who has done a stand-up bit on, I think, Netflix. Anyway, she's very raw, very edgy, and most importantly, very honest, and, you know, people should check her out if they can.
Does she base her comedy on her ethnicity?
Yeah, she mentions that a lot, and a lot of things that really aren't talked about. As far as inter-Asian divisions, where they, you know, they entertain stereotypes about one another also.
Okay, Denny, thank you for that comment. I have never heard of this comedian. I don't know if either of you have.
I know who she is. She has a Netflix dance special. I know that she's very, she can kind of very, very raunchy and explores a lot of, you know, issues with sexuality and whatnot. I will admit that I'm not too familiar with her work. I do know who she is. But you know, look, if she's successful, that's great, because there aren't a lot of female Asian American comics out there, and you know, it's a good sign that someone is breaking through.
Shrivi, we've already heard from Sopan that he believes that things are changing in Hollywood and for Asian actors, actresses, even slowly but changing. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, we have to look at the historical context, and if you think about segregation and other immigration acts in the past that excluded Asians in society, these can kind of get reflected in the framing of stories and how media portrays what's going on in society. So if you look at after the civil rights movement, for instance, you see much more positive, seemingly positive portrayals of model minorities, but they still work to kind of say that model for whom? So often it's a model for African Americans and Latino Americans, saying that this is how you should be. So there are some of these things that have changed over time, historically, in terms of representations. We've also seen an era of, Japanese internment, which gets reflected in portrayals of Asians as perpetual foreigners or aliens all the time. So, you know, with things changing in society, we do see changes in the portrayals. These are not static and they're pretty dynamic. So I do think in the last 10 years or so, though, you know, the numbers have almost been constant in films, maybe television, we've seen more opportunities and portrayals, which is heartening. I would say that things are improving, but there's still a lot more ways to go, because a lot of times the shows also don't stay too long on air; they're dropped, and so we need to kind of find ways in which there's not just a token representation, but lead roles are given to Asian Americans, and the stories are about their complex and multifaceted aspects of their identities. So we've not yet reached there at all. I mean, we're far from that goal.
Vicky from Columbus, you're on the air. Your question, please.
Hello. Hi, is it me?
Yes, Vicky, hi.
Hi. Okay, well, in listening to the comments about whether, if I'm from Korea, can I get a job acting, representing somebody from China, et cetera, and I think back to the movies where it was a white actor with his eyes stretched to make him look Asian, playing the character of an Asian. Now, we've come far from that ridiculousness, but it just seems to me, as I watch movies and TV shows, I when it's a white actor, I look at it and I say, okay, if this actor, and if this character instead was played by an Asian or a black actor, would it affect the story? And most of the time I have to say no. So I think you just get an acting job according to your talents.
Okay, Vicky, thank you for your thoughts. And obviously there's something to be said for some lead roles, especially not having anything specific as far as race or culture. But there's others that are definitely specific. And I think that it's interesting that you brought up, Sopan, the fact that in the last decade, how gays and lesbians have been portrayed as more of in a friendly manner, and how that then perpetuated to the thought processes of people around the U.S., whereas the media does have a part to play in how people think about racist culture, all those things.
Yeah, I think that's right. And now, as I said, what are the... Let's take a show like Master of None with Aziz Ansari. I think you learn a decent amount about a genuine aspect, not the whole thing, a genuine aspect of an immigrant experience that you're not going to get in many places because that story isn't told very well. But if you watch Master of None, you probably don't even realize it, but you are learning something about what it's like to grow up in this country, as a South Asian kid. And you're there for the laughs, right? You're there for the story. You're there for Aziz and his quips and his, dating travails. But whether you realize it or not, you are kind of learning something.
Sure. Thank you both. That is all the time we have today. I would like to thank our guest, culture writer for The New York Times, Sopan Deb. Thanks for staying with us the full hour. And Dr. Srivi Ramasubramanian, media psychologist and associate professor at Texas A&M University, thanks for listening, and thank you all for joining us. This is All Size with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.